So, welcome everyone. I would like to invite you to the conversation with Mr. Jiří Kirián, who is Deputy Head of Mission and Head of Political Economic Unit at the Czech Embassy in Warsaw. Mr. Kirián graduated from University of Economics in Prague and Diplomatic Academy. And our conversation is part of the project called Poland's Regional Position in Times of Global Tensions and Rivalry. This project is supported by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Poland within the Public Diplomacy 2021 project. My name is Marcin Kuszczel. I am a graduate of the PhD program in political science at the University of Wrocław. And I will have the pleasure to conduct this conversation with Mr. Kirián. And we will be talking mainly about Central European cooperation and its role in the Czech foreign policy. So, Mr. Kirián, I'm very happy that you accepted the invitation. I'm very happy that we can speak today. And my first question will be about the role of Central European cooperation in the Czech foreign policy. How would you describe the role of this cooperation?
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me to this conversation. Hello to everybody. Role of the Central European cooperation and the Czech Republic. This is a very interesting question because Central Europe is basically where we are, but also who we are. So we cannot really distinguish, the Central European policy from any other part of the foreign policy of the Czech Republic. The role there is definitely crucial. If we look at the recent history or the modern history of my country, I would like to refer to the speech that our former president Václav Havel gave in Sejm during his first visit to Poland at the beginning of the year 1990. He was referring to our shared experience, historical experience with communism, but he was also referring to the new opportunities we have and also responsibilities for our future. And the way forward, which he suggested, was cooperation. And this cooperation, basically this idea, was the very foundation of the Visegrad cooperation as we know it today. So, back to your question, the role of the Central European cooperation, it has been there from the very beginning of the modern foreign policy of the Czech Republic or earlier Czechoslovakia. As we see it, of course, Central European region is comprised of many countries, be it Czech Republic, be it Slovak Republic, be it Hungary, be it Poland, and others, and all those countries are different. So basically, without the cooperation among our countries, both the development and the significance of this region on the European continent would be much lower. And we can see that from the results that the Visegrad cooperation gave to our countries. You know that already at the very beginning of the Visegrad cooperation, our countries agreed on the free trade area. We had the so-called Central European Free Trade Area, which boosted our mutual trade, and it also helped to transform our economies. And this was one of the first steps to prepare our economies for joining the European Union, the single market. So this is just one of the few examples to underline the importance of the Central European cooperation in our foreign policy doctrine.
Mm-hmm. And how is it is perceived in the Czech foreign policy doctrine? Is it perceived as a part of European policy, or does it have this Central European, let's say, activity and Central European policy perceived as a separate policy, as a separate activity?
I don't think we can really divide these two things, because as I said, you know, from the very beginning of the modern era, post-communist era of our countries, the, as we called it in my country, the so-called return to Europe became the cornerstone and the primary objective of the regional cooperation among our countries. So basically, I mean, these are very closely interlinked. We cannot really divide them. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have bilateral relations among others, like, you know, Czechia with Slovakia, you know, the shared history of Czechoslovakia. We have bilateral relations with Poland, with Hungary, but that goes hand in hand, you know, with the regional cooperation. So you cannot, we cannot really, you know, separate that from bilateral, from regional, and from the European, because many bilateral issues became also regional, and many regional issues are also important because they are part of the whole European European policy, of the whole European project. So these are very closely interlinked, and that basically the biggest piece of evidence to show that is that, you know, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, of Ministries of Foreign Affairs of our countries lost the monopoly for international affairs, because now you see that cooperation, for instance, in transportation, in healthcare, in education, in defense, in security, police matters, I mean, this is not isolated and it's not exclusive. Now we see that there are multiple layers of the of, you know, this this cooperation, be it European, be it bilateral, be it regional, but they are so closely interlinked that, you know, separating them, you know, separating one from the other would be impossible.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And how do you assess the cooperation within the Visegrad Group so far? Because recently the V4 celebrated its 30th anniversary, so it's a good time for this kind of resume. And in what direction should the Visegrad Group cooperation develop in future, in your opinion?
The Visegrad cooperation is extremely successful, in my opinion, because it is a very, very flexible platform for coordination among our other countries. From the very beginning, we had the shared experience of communism, but all our countries had different style of communism. You know, it affected economy and the society in a different way. So basically, for us, the biggest value added from the very beginning was exchange of best practices and experience. And this basically set the course for the Visegrad cooperation. And I think that the biggest success of it is It's flexibility. We don't have any institutions that would be a burden to the cooperation. Any country, any member of the V4 can bring up any issue that that the country sees as important. We, of course, discuss it. When we find common ground, we then work together. But in case we don't, I mean, no hard feelings, you know, these things happen. We know that we have different positions on many issues, but we just know that the Visegrad cooperation, if we find common ground on various issues, increases not just our strength, for instance, in the EU when we negotiate about certain issues, but also it enhances our coalition potential. Because if there is a group of four countries presenting one position, then, you know, the snowball effect may add other countries or other regional groupings, like, for instance, the Baltic states. It may be the Nordics. It may be countries from the south of Europe. It depends also on the issues we talk. So basically, this is for me, you know, the biggest success of the Visegrad cooperation. Of course, this helped us
kind
also
of flexibility, if I understand correctly.
Yes, it is the flexibility, because mm-hmm. also, you know, this helped us to keep important issues on the agenda of the European Union, and I'm referring to the pertaining issues of Eastern Partnership. Which is perceived by many Western European member states as not as important as we see it. It is also the issue of enlargement, and especially in the Western Balkans, because there are a few countries who aspire to be members of the EU, and some of them are already negotiating. So these are the issues that the Visegrad Group is trying, and I think we are doing it quite successfully, trying to keep them high on the European agenda, especially with the recent developments on the Polish-Belarusian border. Now we see that the Eastern Partnership is even more important than it was before. So, you know, Visegrad Group is holding these ideas and keeping them on the eyes of other member states.
Mm-hmm. So when I was asking in which direction should the Visegrad cooperation develop in future, so in your opinion, these two areas, because you talked about the Eastern Partnership and the enlargement policy of the European Union, do you believe that these areas will be the crucial in terms of, you know, Visegrad agenda in the next years?
I do, actually. I really do. Because if we look at what is happening in the Eastern European region, we see that it is area of conflict, it is area of problems. And who could help these countries but the European Union, but us? So we think that, and some of the countries clearly said that their aspirations, their strategic objectives, are either membership of the European Union or membership of NATO. And because we are in line with these positions, I mean, we should really help these countries to pursue these goals. There are several ways to do that, because, you know, you mentioned the future development of the Visegrad cooperation, and I think that there are a few more areas where we could do more. One of them is regional cooperation, and I can quote just you know, recent examples which we are dealing with right now, you know, at the Czech embassy in Warsaw. Traditionally, there have been regional partnerships only between regions among the Czecho-Polish border. But now we see more and more interest in various voivodeships in Poland, which are not really close to the Czech border, and also in the regions in the Czech Republic, which are, you know, that are also not very close to the border, that they want to have a regional partnership with other countries. Recent example, for instance, is Malopolska, which is developing its tourism sector, and they are very much interested in sharing experience with some regions from the Czech Republic, and this is the way we should develop, you know, the Visegrad cooperation even more. A few months ago, we had a very successful meeting of various towns and cities from Visegrad countries who are also bond with their partnerships. And they are discussing issues like smart cities, you know, future development of the municipal infrastructures. So I think this is also a way how to provide more value added, you know, when we speak about Visegrad cooperation. But also, what is, in my opinion, the most important is people-to-people contact. People who travel, people who meet other people from different countries, including the V4. These people are more open to other influences. They are richer in their experience. And of course, you know, these personal bonds, these personal, you know, friendships from various countries, this is something that builds a positive narrative for our bilateral and also regional relations. So I think that we could do more also in this area. And by saying that, I'm not criticizing the work of the International Visegrad Fund, which is a very, very efficient institution, very lean, also in terms of costs, the running costs of it, because the International Visegrad Fund is capable of managing many projects with really, really low running costs. So the more people gets, the more money gets to people, to various organizations, and this is something we definitely support.
Mm-hmm. So maybe let me ask you also about the risks that you see for the further functioning of Central European cooperation, mainly in the context of the Visegrad Group, because in a moment I would like to also ask you about 3Cs initiative, but at that point let's stay within the Visegrad Group context. Do you see any risks ahead of us?
If you look at the last 30 years of the Visegrad cooperation, you could clearly see that there were periods of higher and lower interest. And the biggest risk of all, of course, is the interest of the four states that are creating the Visegrad Group. So if we are interested in the regional cooperation, if we support it, if we are ready to invest in it, and I'm not speaking only about money, I'm speaking about the, you know, the political costs, as we may call it. So this is something that could be a risk to Visegrad cooperation. In my opinion, something that could endanger the Visegrad cooperation is the loss of the flexibility I mentioned earlier. There have been debates on, for instance, creating a permanent secretariat to Visegrad cooperation and things like that. But on the other hand, if we speak with other international partners, they are amazed by the simple fact that Visegrad cooperation has been here for 30 years. Without any institutions, without any secretariat, without any permanent structures, and it keeps its efficiency and flexibility. Of course, there is the institution of International Visegrad Fund, but that is necessary to manage the project. But you know, keeping this and keeping the openness of the Visegrad cooperation, among others, with, you know, further development of the format V4+, including on ad hoc basis, you know, political dialogue and cooperation with other countries, be it Japan, being the Baltic states, be it you know, whatever country or group of countries you name it, that is value added. If we, however, decide to be exclusive, that I see as a risk for Visegrad cooperation as well. So let's stay open to cooperation, to new ideas, and let's stay flexible, let's stay lean, and in this way, I think we would remain efficient as we are.
Mm-hmm. So now maybe let's move to the 3Cs initiative, because I'm very curious, what is the approach of the Czech Republic towards this initiative? And maybe do you perceive it in any way as a threat or maybe a danger to the Visegrad Group format?
I would start with the last question. I don't see it as a threat to the Visegrad cooperation, because Visegrad countries are benefiting from the 3Cs initiative. So and are cooperating very, very actively in that. So I don't see a threat there, not now. And I hope that there won't be any threat like that in future. The position of my country is extremely pragmatic. We come from the point that every initiative that would help or assist in other way or boost the development of our region, our countries, is welcome. And this initiative has in its objective development of critical infrastructure, transport connectivity, energy security, digitalization. Who can say anything against these objectives? This is something our countries definitely need. We know that our countries lag behind other European countries in many areas like that. You see, and I'm quite critical towards my country. I mean, not even the motorway network is finished in my country. And now there are new challenges like the high-speed train connections, which is also a new project which we started developing with higher speed also in my country. And I can say that the talks with Poland, for instance, or Austria, were extremely successful. And I hope that we will see the start of construction of this kind of infrastructure that would also, you know, further, you know, help to develop the economic potential of our countries, that we will see it done. So let's hope this will happen. What we don't consider really necessary is creating, as I said, we have the example of V4, creation of any permanent secretariat of the V4 cooperation. If we go on with the 3 C's initiative fund, okay, there needs to be management of the fund, which is logical, just like in the case of International Visegrad Fund. But you know, do we need any secretariat of an initiative which is held on the highest level, on the highest political level? It is basically in the hands of the heads of state. Let's see what the development, you know, might be in future. Mm-hmm. What we also would like to see is a bigger involvement of other players in this, because basically building infrastructure on the European continent or in the area of the EU will not be possible without European funds. So that's why we see involvement of the European Commission as crucial. Just like Germany, because Germany is both Poland's and Czechia's biggest neighbor and one of the biggest economic partners. Therefore, the infrastructure connectivity with Germany is of crucial importance. I mean, nobody can really say anything against that. And that is really welcome, is the involvement of the United States, who that already announced, you know, their contribution to the fund created by the 3C's initiative. So let's hope that, you know, we will not have the 3C's initiative as an exclusive club, and that it would be open to other interested countries and other projects that would actually, you know, improve or add up to those projects that will help, you know, to boost further our development.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So now I would like to ask you a little bit tricky question, but please say what do you think in general about the role that Poland should play in regional cooperation initiatives such as Visegrad Group and now the CRISIS initiative. In your opinion, what the role of Poland should be in this regional formats?
I don't think it is a tricky question, but it is the answer, you know, the future is unknown. And, you know, for me, the basic question is, what is the ambition of Poland? What role would Poland would like to play? Because Poland, if we compare my country with, you know, with Poland, Poland is 4 times bigger than the Czech Republic, both in terms of territory and population. Of course, that makes Poland not just more visible, but also the potential of Poland in terms of economy and regional and international affairs is much higher. So for us, and we are eagerly waiting to get this answer, You may probably know that the current foreign policy strategy of the Republic of Poland is valid until the end of this year. And we are eagerly waiting for publishing of the new foreign policy strategy, where we would see, and we hope we would see, the definition, how the level of ambition of the Polish foreign policy is defined. We know that Poland is very ambitious if it comes to regional initiatives. And we are all right with that, because Poland, of course, as I said, is a bigger country with a bigger potential. But let's see what ambitions would Poland decide for herself. We still don't have this answer, but we are just let's put it this way. Regardless of the level of ambition, the Visegrad cooperation will still be there, and we will openly and frankly debate any issues or any topics that would come on the agenda. Of course, if it comes to the level of ambition, everybody in the Visegrad group wants the 3Cs initiative to succeed, not to fail. So let's see what the future would bring. Also, on our side, we are waiting for appointment of the new government, and we are not 100% clear about the details of the foreign policy vectors of the new government. From what I have just read in the media and from the statements of the future, or let's say, members of parliament, members of government to still to be, we see that there is a very high interest in further development of regional cooperation, and of course, very high interest in building very good neighborly relations. Because if you look at the current foreign policy strategy of my country, for instance, the bilateral relations with Poland are called strategic relations, because Poland is for the Czech Republic the third most important market in terms of exports and imports, and the Czech Republic for Poland is the second most important market if it comes to Polish exports to the Czech Republic. So, how we are, interlinked in various levels, not just economically, that increases our interest in what the future, ambitions of the Polish government would be in terms of foreign policy and regional cooperation, because expectations are, actually quite high.
And regarding the recent developments, especially this debate about the future of Europe, this debate, I think, recently gained additional momentum because of the declaration of the new coalition in Germany, the ruling coalition, that announced that the plan of this coalition will be to develop in the direction of federalism at the European level. So do you believe that the Visegrad Group is the right format of political cooperation to try to prepare a vision of the future of Europe, of the Central European states? And if it is possible at all, in your opinion, to prepare this kind of joint vision, joint concept of how European Union should look like in future?
I think that any platform, not just the Visegrad Corporation or the Visegrad Group, is good for such a debate, because the question or the issue of how and in what direction the European Union should develop has been here from the very beginning. There have always been federalists, and there have always been supporters of a union of national states. And always the political debate was about finding the balance in that particular point in time. I think that the current debate is one in a row of debates which we have had periodically over the last 20 years when I started really following the European affairs. I remember when I joined the Foreign Service approximately 20 years ago, there was the debate on la finalité d'Europe, which was, you know, in a similar way debate on, you know, what should be the strategic direction of the European integration. Should there be more integration? Should there be less integration? Or are we happy with the current state? And if you look at the declarations of the, for instance, V4 prime ministers over the last 1 or 2 years, you see that the prime ministers have been discussing this issue in detail. And it is very important to, but this doesn't apply only to V4 cooperation, in general, to discuss our visions for future of Europe and try to find common ground. And I would, you know, yet again, you know, come back to the very, you know, basis of the Visegrad cooperation. It's the flexibility, it's the coordination. If we find common ground, we work together. If we don't, no bad feelings. And I think that we should have this kind of approach in Europe as well. When we find common ground, and you know that the primary legislation, the treaties, can be changed or amended only with the consent of all member states. There's unanimity. So we must have understanding on the future direction of the European integration. It may be partial, it may be like just small areas, because currently, you know, all governments are consumed by the COVID pandemic. So I don't think right now there is no time for any revolutionary changes. But still we must talk and debate every possible detail of where we see Europe right now and where would like we see Europe in 5, 10 or 50 years. And I can't speak right now on behalf of Czech Republic in detail, because we are also waiting for appointment of the new government. And the Czech Republic is holding a presidency of the EU in the second half of the 2022. So there are a few things which we, or perhaps many things which we don't know. There may be, you know, like various accents to the new foreign policy of the new Czech government. But I'm pretty sure about one thing, that the debate or the involvement of the new Czech government in the debate on the future development of the EU and the European integration would be very active. That was already said by the future prime minister. And I saw statements like that from various ministers that are still to be appointed. So we would be very active in that, in particular, not only in V4, but also with other partners.
Mm-hmm. So maybe for the end of our conversation, let me ask you one more thing about other alternative regional initiatives, such as the Central European Initiative, which I think is one of the oldest initiatives of Central European cooperation, but actually not so much active. And also about the more recent format, 17+1, initiated by China. Do you also see the future of this kind of cooperation, which is more open for many countries and also for, I would say, global players?
I see future for these initiatives, but also, you know, every initiative or every international organization is basically a tool for the countries who created it or that founded it. And If you have this tool, you can do a lot of things with that, or you cannot just, you just need not use the tool at all. This is very much up to you. I wouldn't call these initiatives alternative because they are so different. You cannot really say that, for instance, Central European Initiative as an alternative to the Visegrad Cooperation or to the Lublin Triangle or to, you know, Austerlitz format, because these are just different. They have different membership, but they have also different objectives. Of course, if you have the 17 or 16 plus one, the cooperation with China, basically every country involved in this initiative has different objectives vis-a-vis China. Some of them political, some of them economic, some of them want, you know, Chinese involvement in constructions of infrastructure of and things like that. So basically, these are not really alternatives. These are just complementary to what we see. None of these initiatives, if you look at them, can, in my opinion, replace the V4 for the Czech Republic. There are other initiatives like the Bucharest 9. Bucharest 9 has also, you know, different membership, but also different objective. We discuss security and defense, you know, among the Visegrad countries. But B9 is just a broader format to discuss, you know, defense and security. And this all happens within NATO, and this all happens within the defense and security policy of the European Union. So I see future for them, but the future will be defined by the countries or by the government of the countries that are involved in these initiatives. You know, anything may happen to them. If we decide to give them, you know, more objectives or higher priority, that is up to us. But I don't think any of them currently can endanger the V4 cooperation.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. So thank you very much, Mr. Kirian, for this very informative conversation. I'm very happy that you shared with us, with our audience, the perspective, your perspective and your perspective, and also the Czech Republic perspective. And I would like to also say thank you to our listeners for the attendance of our podcast. Thank you very much.
I thank you very much for the invitation, and all the best to you and all the listeners, and please stay safe and healthy, and you know, enjoy Advent and the Christmas period.